Blog Talk Radio.
Does it fit in his shoes that walk the mile? Does his legs, they've done worse, left them black and white? Does his hips, they are wide, but they know how to move? Does his hair, his lips are weak?
Welcome to the Black Womaniverse. This is your host, Seek Wisdom. Today is Sunday, April 18th, and today we will have a follow-up to the last show. On the last show or session, as I'm going to call it, we discussed the woman is the first teacher. If you did not catch our last session, please go back and download it. You can also put it on your iPod via iTunes. Via the icon that is on Blog Talk Radio. For those who may be listening to us on Facebook, come on over and join us in the chat room. You can find us on blogtalkradio.com/Black Womaniverse. Before we get into today's topic, which will be a discussion or going over some information in a book by our beloved brother, Dr. Ashaka Musa Barashango, and that book is The African Woman. I'm sorry, African Woman, The Original Guardian Angel. And I felt this would be the appropriate follow-up to The Woman is the First Teacher. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and play a brief 60-minute announcement, and we will be right back.
Hi, this is Tanya K. Freeman, affectionately called Diva Mama Tanya, and I'd love for you to join me and my beloved on a retreat cruise to the Bahamas the weekend of October 29th to November 1st. Celebrate awakening the diva within. Enjoy life-changing seminars and belly dance rituals on Coco Cay Island. Invite your significant other to participate in embracing the sacred masculine. Then join us again as we share our views on the beauty and the power of sacred intimacy. Contact Alicia at 877-227-5184 or visit wombshaman.com. That's wombshaman.com. Relax, renew, refresh on this extraordinary journey.
Okay, welcome back to the Black Womaniverse. I've been talking for about a minute and didn't realize I was on mute. So I apologize. I'm going to go ahead and open up the lines of Sister Earth. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Peace, sis.
Peace, Sister Saint.
All right, peace. All right, I'm going to open up Pastor Flower's line, but just not right now because I know she was getting some sleep in, so I'm going to give her a minute before I open up her line. But if you have a comment or want to pose a question, Pastor Flowers, just press 1, and I'll know that you're ready for your line to be open. As I mentioned, we're going to go over and go through the book by our beloved Dr. Ashaka Musa Barashango, and the book that we are speaking about today is African Woman, The Original Guardian Angel. Now, I'm not going to read everything out of the book, but I'm going to touch on a lot of information within the book. And I'm going to repeat, if you did not catch last week's show, actually, I don't even know it was last week. I'll just say the last show. The title of the show is The Woman is the First Teacher. So I want everyone to go back and listen to that show if you have not gotten a chance to hear that particular show. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and go over some information in this book because this is a follow-up to that last show, and it will start to go into more depth and knowledge in reference to who the black woman is and why she was considered the original guardian angel. And since we've already said she's the first teacher, then we have to explain why she was the first teacher. Want to say peace and blessings to everyone in the chat room. I see you, sis Jado 8 in the UK. Want to give a shout out to you, Reverend Majadi Baruti, and of course, send KV conscious vibrations, a tapu love and respect to you. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and go and read the introduction to this book because the introduction has a lot of information in it. And Sister Earth, you you know, let me know if you have some things to add, or because you know we had a lot of discussion about this book already while I was going through and highlighting some things, y'all. This book of mine has so many highlights in it; it's not even funny. And I'm going to go ahead and give the call-in number in case people have questions or comments later. But, again, that calling number is going to be 646-716-7675. Maybe toward the last 30 minutes or so, we can get into comments and questions. But pretty much, I just want to go over some information that's in the book for the most part. Oh, one other thing before I get to the book. A lot of us have been networking and coming together on some of the social networking sites, Ning. And the past week or so, there's been information coming out that Ning is going to start phasing out the free networking sites. And so I just want to put it out there to the people who listen to the radio show and the people who participate with the many Ning networks out there. If you are interested in keeping these Ning networks going, then we need to start actively participating, helping, and donating, because we all knew ahead of time that it wasn't going to be free, you know, all the time. And there was going to come a point where they were going to start charging. And this information and the connections that we've built on these social networking sites is very important. So, you know, the brothers and the sisters that are doing, you know, radio shows and social networking sites trying to get information out there, we need support, because a lot of times, most of the times, we're taking funds out of our own pocket to produce the radio shows. Yes, Blog Talk is free, but, you know, the time that goes into producing a radio show and, you know, purchasing books so that we can study ourselves and then present information to the people, and, of course, you know, internet service, phone service, and then your social networking site, which was free, but now we're going to be charged for that. So, you know, any way that the community that uses these services, you know, to enlighten themselves and others, any way that you can contribute, you know, please do to the various people who are, you know, putting this information out to the people. So I just wanted to mention that. All right. Again, the book is The African Woman, The Original Guardian Angel by Ashaka Musa Barashango. I'm going to go ahead and read the introduction. Black women, the epitome of beauty and wisdom in the ancient world. It is our hope and prayer that the reiteration of the historical data presented in this work will contribute to the realization that the standards and trends of physical beauty as manifested in feminine physique, hairstyles, cosmetics, and fashion were first set by the original black woman. For she collectively held the position of Miss Universe for untold successive generations. Yes, overwhelming archaeological, anthropological, and historical documentation has revealed beyond a shadow of a doubt that the African woman was the first beauty queen on earth, and the adoration of her exquisite comeliness so inspired the imagination of human creative thought that she was projected into the heavens. At that time in history, between 100,000 and 18,000 years ago, it appears that all black women in the world felt very good about themselves, because there was not even an inkling of a doubt as to her being the sheer essence of feminine pulchritude. For long extended periods of human history, the whole world revered and literally worshipped the African woman. I'm going to back up and repeat that. For long extended periods of human history, the whole world revered and literally worshipped the African woman. In fact, the first sacerdotal objects of veneration were replicas of the female anatomy. In terms of historical reality, all religious symbols, i.e. the cross, the star, the crescent, the Star of David, etc., can be traced back to the black woman's body, because she was once regarded by the ancients as the supreme divine vessel of life. This particular subject is rather thoroughly explored and discussed in the aforementioned work, African Genesis and Historical Reality. Dr. Yosef Binyakinen, as do all truly enlightened Afrocentric scholars, says that in his opinion, the African woman is still the real standard of beauty in the world today. Therefore, my beloved sisters, as the scriptures declare, rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Take off the sackcloth of blues and hurt songs and adorn yourself with your original African glory. Of the main things that keep emerging during our research and studies in the various disciplines of Africanology is the irrefutable fact that without the joys of the feminine gender, the world would self-destruct. Of course, most men can appreciate this on a physical level, but in the spiritual but it is a spiritual energy generated by this sexual unity that makes union with a woman so potent. This yin-yang activating principle is reflected in everything throughout the universe, from the minutest atom to the remotest galaxy. As evidence, puritanical societies where sexual harmony is repressed tend to be more violent and aggressive. Now, I'm not citing this in spirit of abject promiscuity or to emphasize mere biological gratification, but rather as a reaffirmation of ancient African high culture societies' general attitude towards and genuine concern for the achievement of a cosmic balance in human sexuality. This is one of the hallmarks of these original civilizations before the disruption of foreign invaders, who were generally discontent with themselves and their native habitation, as well as suffering from myriad pathologies such as ambiguous sexual dysmorphism and psychosexual maladjustment. The role of black women in the establishment of civilizations is irrefutable, for she made possible all the treasures of civilization we now hold so dear. From time immemorial, man has depended upon woman for the development of the arts and sciences of civilization. This is especially true of the original African race, the first people on earth. So profound was the African woman's contribution to the growth and advancement of humanity that she was enshrined in the hearts of the people of the early civilizations as the queen of heaven, the mother goddess, the creatress of all living things, and her earthly daughters were adored by black men as angels of light, of whom it was said that no man could achieve total knowledge of God without complete oneness with her. She was the first true civilizing force on earth. It is because of her that we are able to eat an abundant variety of healthy and tasteful foods, live in houses, write the alphabet, record time, reckon mathematics, and conduct ourselves in the world with some semblance of civility. The superb actor and scholar Avery Brooks of A Man Called Hawks fame reminds us that the ancient scripture says that woman is wisdom and wisdom is the breath of God. Unfortunately, some brothers may be a little less than comfortable with the resurgence of this knowledge. Nevertheless, I suggest an awakening to the historical reality that all available scientific evidence reveals that it was a black woman who first came to the understanding and implemented the principles of civilization. Should not in any way cause the black man to feel the need to indulge the machoism of male chauvinistic insecurities. Okay, that was a portion of the introduction. I'm not going to read the whole thing. All right, I'm going to go ahead forward to Section 1. And Section 1 is titled An Afrocentric Perspective on the Origin of Angels. I'm going to read some sections out of here. Sister Irv, did you have any comments or anything on the introduction?
No.
Okay. According to Albert Churchward, the first concept of angels evolved out of the human-headed bird symbol of Cnidian iconography. Barbara Walker informs us that because birds travel freely between the earthly and heavenly realms, they were everywhere regarded as angelic messengers, givers of omens, possessors of occult secrets, as well as soul carriers. Carrion crows and vultures took souls to heaven. Storks brought them back to earth for rebirth. Wise owls told secrets of the night. Wise priestly professors of ancient African astro-mythological scientific symbology taught that each person had a guardian angel, which was also called a genius or genie. This spiritual entity, which represented the essence of human genius, was generally described as the feminine anima of inspiration, a learned reference to the fact that man first acquired scientific knowledge through the creative genius of African women. Peace and blessings to Ebony Women of the Diaspora, a.k.a. Pastor Flowers. All right. Funk and Wagner Standard Dex Dictionary, Volume 1, Definition Number 4, says that in ancient mythology, the word genius denoted a supernatural being appointed to guide a person throughout life. The French word genius is also used in the English language comes from the French word genius as used in the English. Lord, I'm repeating the same thing over and over again. Sorry. The French word genius as used in the English language comes from the Latin gignere, meaning variously to beget, bear, produce, or give life. The Greek genestai, to be born. It is also related to the word genie from the Arabic jinn. In literary translation, it generally refers to a person with exceptional powers, often considered to be magical. In short, the term genius, loosely translated, signifies an inspirational force that engenders the higher intellect, a posture originally accorded to the feminine energies in the cosmos. The role of African woman in the cerebral sphere is clearly set forth in the Hebrew rendering of the phrase Holy Ghost. Ruach, Kodesh, meaning a vital stimulating force, especially one that influences the mind. In Kushite India, it was known as the Kundalini, the serpentine fire of wisdom and universal enlightenment to the high culture scientists of old Hindu Kush. This principle was also known as the Shakti, a man's eternal soulmate manifested on the earthly plane through the woman or woman in his life. And as a cosmic spirit which took him into her ecstatic embrace at death. This concept is still portrayed in modern art when martyrs and fallen heroes are depicted in statuary and other media as being born to heaven by giant angels. As an extension of the imagery of the winged goddess of ancient Kush and Kemet, one of the earliest forms of angel art takes us back to the empire of Sumer. The black men and women of Sumer created a fabulous empire with outstanding astronomers, a system of cuneiform script, and a very high degree of civilization. One of their kings, Urnemu, is shown engraved on a stele with a protecting angel hovering above his head as he reverently bows in prayer. The angel is holding something, and we will find out. I'm sorry, y'all. I don't know why I keep getting lost right here. The angel is holding pattern over this ancient black ruler's head is a symbol of something, and we will find out as we continue our investigation what that symbol is. Journalist Edgar J. Ridley reminds us that one of the main contributing factors to the problems which plagues black people today is the general unwillingness or inability to distinguish symbol from reality. All too often, we take the symbol to be real. And when a person believes that the symbol of something is, in fact, the thing it represents, they become totally confused. Therefore, one of the priorities of Afrocentric scholars is to help separate the symbol from actuality and clarify the fact that what one sees in image and artwork is a symbol of something else, something that is, in fact, real. Though most of us were first introduced to the notion of angels via Judeo-Christian teachings, we must come to understand the historical reality that this idea came to us through the influence of the church rather than as a product of its own creation. The word angel as used in English language is from the Greek angelos, meaning messenger, the same being so in the Hebrew malak and the Arabic malik. Initially, the designation referred to a messenger, one who was on a mission with a message and usually denoted a human rather than a superhuman being. In terms of a strict scientific definition, this is how the word angel was applied. However, in the high culture science of many ancient African civilizations, the angel symbol had an esoteric as well as a practical function. The perception of angels in ancient Hebrew theology was directly related to the evolution of anthropomorphism, that is to say, the attribution of human qualities to the supreme deity. In their cultural review, this brings us to how and why how, why, and when the concept developed amongst them. Albert E. Bailey, in the book Daily Life in Bible Times, informs us that after Babylonians in 587 BCE utterly demolished Jerusalem, the idea of Judea led the Hebrews off into captivity. The sacerdotal class of the bonded population responded to this dilemma thusly. Because of their deportation, the priests were out of a job, and both they and their prophets had to find some new channel of religious activity. They therefore took up teaching. They turned toward the past to the stories of their national heroes and the incidents of their tumultuous history. They set themselves to interpret it all in the light of religion and to rewrite it as a series of lessons for the admonition and guidance of future generations. Thus, they changed what had been story and history into a textbook of religious education, sagas and chronicles into the Bible. Here, Bailey gets right to the point by simply stating that the priests and prophets were out of a job, yet they were creative and innovative enough to develop something which would provide them with employment. Thus, the whole thing about angels and other elements of Hebrew theological mythology was born out of the clergy's need to find a way of making a living. They were desperate to come up with a mechanism for getting the people's attention again. Now that they were in Babylon, the herd mentality of the masses was no longer at their disposal, because the devout suppliant did not have to come up to the temple and pay money for cows, the bulls, the turtles, and everything else the priest had to cut open for sacrifice and sprinkle blood on. In fact, the general attitude of the Israelite people towards the ecclesiastical aristocracy was, "We don't need you anymore. What can you do for us? Why, you don't even have a temple." So the sacerdotal class, in the process of solving these problems, evolved a whole body of literature based on and oftentimes drawn directly from the Cushite, Kemetian, Sumerian, Babylonian, Persian, Indian, and other ancient African high culture principles and precepts in circulation at the time. So I read all of that information to just get to the point that due to whatever was going on during this time frame we're reading, which we see people needed a job, they chose to use history or what was told as stories and reverted it to history and created the Bible. Now, I'm not saying that everything in the Bible is false, because it isn't. We have to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but we also have to understand how things got turned and twisted around and then presented to us in the way that they have. Going to look at the switchboard right quick. All right. Pastor Flowers, again, let me know when you want your line to be open. Either you can put a comment in the chat room or press 1. In their formulation of sacred scriptures, the Israelite priests and scribes inculcated the idea of an angel being more than just a human messenger. This continued to mushroom into an increasing emphasis on divine transcendence, which resulted in the reluctant to ascribe to Yahweh certain activities. Thus, in later Hebrew theology, the Lord God no longer reveals himself directly through an angel to his prophets. So the concept of there being supernatural flying angels soaring through the air for sundry reasons became an ever-recurring theme in Hebrew literature. Israelite priests had also observed that Kemetian and Babylonian kings and dignitaries often had what was called interpreters. Not that anyone had to interpret for them, but protocol dictated that no one except the royal family and certain members of the nobility could talk directly to the king. So the Hebrew clergy figured if men do this on earth, naturally their supreme deity should do likewise in heaven. Thus they created for him in their literature supernatural messengers in the form of angels. Unfortunately, because of their male chauvinistic point of view, they transmogrified the original African female angelic scientific symbol into neutered males. As we previously stated, originally the term angel literally meant a messenger, a person carrying a message, usually from some great dignitary to someone else, that it was also a symbol of spiritual power, and that it was also a symbol of spiritual power of the feminine energy which motivated and stimulated human intellect. what are guardian angels? As we continue to lay the foundation for understanding the significance of angel symbology in the ancient world, before it was co-opted and corrupted by European Christianity, let us examine the true meaning of the concept of guardian angel. In Isaiah 40, 21, and 31, we read, I hate reading old English, but anyway. Hast thou not known, hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary, there is no searching of his understanding. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. The above text gives us a key as to what angels really meant in the ancient science, mythology, and symbolism of African people. The term wait, as employed in the phrase, they wait upon the Lord, comes from the Hebrew gava, meaning to look and hope for, to expect. It does not imply a standing still or passive stagnation. Without a correct understanding of the language used in the ancient high culture, scientific terminology, this particular passage of scripture and others conveying this same thought can and have been much misunderstood, misinterpreted, and mistranslated. From what we have been able to ascertain thus far from the rediscovery and studying of the atrocities of the philosophical worldview and the ancients, the major objective of the scripture of this genre was to teach the principles of self-motivation and transcendence. It should be remembered that the mainstay of motivation and transcendence in the ancient world was the African woman. In fact, which will become clearer and clearer as we advance through the succeeding essays. Another intent of the above text was to demonstrate that even though the Cushite Hebrews had a fervent belief in the Creator's protective power, it was clearly understood that it was necessary for a person to consciously put themselves in a state of mental being wherein they could attract and receive such protection. Mounting up like eagles signified that one must be responsible for the quality of his or her own life. A principle of self-realization that is succinctly stated another way in the old adage, God helps those who help themselves. In other words, belief in the divine intervention should not cause you to walk around thinking, I am protected, so it makes no difference what I do. If I should walk out in the street in front of a moving vehicle, I will be all right, for an angel will fly out of the sky and save me in the nick of time. That's how people get hit by cars. Anyway, of course, such an action would be ridiculous, not to mention perhaps fatal. Obviously, angels were not to serve that purpose, but rather they were in reality symbols that reemphasized the awareness of the motivating, inspirational force which emanates from the feminine entity and exhilarates you with the will and the enthusiasm to do for self. Do for self. I thought that was very interesting. Anyway, the next section I'm going to touch on is dwelling in the secret place of the Most High. Firstly, how does one dwell in the secret place of the Most High? The answer is simple, by going inside of yourself. Going inside yourself through prayer and meditation is probably the quickest way in which you can make contact with the Creator. Now, for future reference, every time I see the word Creator, I'm going to say the Great Mother, because that's how I view things from my understanding, and that's what it is, the Great Mother, the cosmic womb that created and birthed everything. Anyway, sages of the ancient African high culture civilization taught that this was the best method of attuning oneself with the light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world, and that self-control in your thoughts and actions release the energy forces which align you with the creative power that brought you into being and the laws of nature which sustain your existence. So in essence, dwelling in the secret place of the Most High denotes a quiet state of meditation. And right now, the time frame that we're in is so important that people get used to going within and seeking information and or counsel from their direct connection with the Great Mother. I'm going to go to the switchboard briefly because I see there is a hand up on the switchboard and it shows as a private number or a Skype call. Could you let us know who you are and where you're calling from?
This is Pastor Flowers.
Peace, Pastor Flowers. How are you?
Sleepy.
Yeah, I was trying to give you a little more time.
Sleepy.
Yeah, I know. Did you have a comment or question about anything we touched on so far?
No, you told me to call in.
Yeah, I did.
I'm listening to what's being said, you know, because they have all the Jewish people have always known that the Great Mother was the Great Mother, and they call it an onion. And so, basically, you know, we were talking about the different priesthood who kind of switched around and changed things after they had been conquered in Babylon. And, I mean, they went through numerous changes, but they basically erased all the feminine principle. They kept it there, but they gave it other names, and they used angels to describe her, and as we know, the Holy Spirit. But all the other male names also refer to the Great Mother.
Right. And see, we're going to be doing another session coming up where we focus on vocabulary, mm-hmm. because it's important that we start to go back and understand the original context in which, you know, these words mean, because that has also been changed around as well.
Yeah, you have to watch the Jewish Bible because they have two different Hebrews. There's today's Hebrew, which pretty much a lot of people read and think that that's the Hebrew of the Bible, but there's an ancient Hebrew that's really Swahili.
Mm.
And that's generally how you can get to finding out, well, you got to take Swahili and somehow you got to take German in here. So they got it mixed in here. But then you can get to the core, actually the seed of what these symbols symbolize. Because when you say the eagles or when you say doves, this is really talking about the African Ma'at too.
Indeed. And see, we're going to touch on, hopefully we will get a chance to get through the entire book because, family, this is a rather short book, but it has a whole lot of information in it. And I don't generally do shows where I pretty much read a book, but the information that was contained in this book was to the point where I didn't have to, I don't necessarily have to jump around in it. You know, so I'm leaving out some information, but I'm trying to get to the meat of the point that Brother Ashaka Musa Barashango is getting to. So with that being said, Sister Earth and Pastor Flowers, y'all just let me know if y'all have a, you know, comment or jump in.
Hello, Sister Earth.
Hey, Pastor Flowers, how are you?
Blessed.
That's what I like to hear.
All right. Okay, let's see here. And for anyone who may have the book, you are more than welcome to go pick the book up right now. I'm on page 15. I'm going to read some portions of this, and then I'm going to get to the next portion of the book. This particular book, just for everyone's reference, is a book full of essays that Dr. Barashango wrote about the black woman and his studies. And you will get some information about him and how he came to knowing, of who and what the black woman was when I get to certain sections of the book. So I'm going to continue. Remember, ancient mythological symbolism was a technical language and scientific formula of those times. Therefore, free yourself from the folly of believing the symbol of something to be the real thing. Also bear in mind that the most powerful deterrent to finding the solution to your daily problems is fear, anxiety, and doubt. You should never allow fear, anxiety, and doubt to govern your life. Actually, you should not allow these energy drainers to ever exist in your thought process. Now that we know this is easier said than Now we know this is easier said than done, but it is certainly worth the effort. For you can accomplish milestones in your life and maybe add some years to it as well by simply eradicating those three negative emotions, fear, anxiety, and doubt, especially doubt in your own worth and ability. This was the supreme object lesson of the ancient mythology of angels, to affirm the reality that one can transcend adversity and overcome life's obstacles through self-help and divine guidance. I couldn't have said what this brother just said any better. Okay, let me see here. All right, this next section or this next essay that's in this book is Angels in Ancient Kemetic Culture. Let me see. A couple things I want to touch on, but I don't want to read the entire section. The concept of winged feminine protectors and revivers expressed in ancient Kemetic high culture science is probably a carryover from the Nubian Grimaldi voluptuous Afrikoid figurines interred with the deceased between 20,000 to 100,000 years ago. These we will be discussing in Essay 7. We have earlier cited that the Kemetic culture, in terms of its historical chronology, preceded the cultures of Sumer, Phoenicia, Arabia, Persia, India, and Babylonia, all of which were originally Cushites. As the fledging Hebrews, who were of this same Afrikoid racial stock, successfully passed through the kingdoms and city-states of these great civilizations, many of the elements of these cultures were handed down to them. This is how the Israelite priests and scribes came upon the idea of winged spirits and angels, exemplified in Isaiah 6, 1 through 3, and 6 through 8. Okay, I'm not going to read that out of Isaiah, but if y'all want to go read it, again, it's Isaiah 6, 1 through 3, and 6 through 8. I'm going to go to a section called The Firebird and the Seraphim. The seraphim creature depicted in Isaiah's scroll is also related to the phoenix, as the firebird is referred to in the Greek language. This flaming emblem of immortality was known as Bennu to the Kemetians. The Bennu was a mythological bird said to live for 500 years, after which time it would kindle a fire on a brier of aromatic spices by fanning its wings, then become engulfed in the flames and perish. During this process, a metamorphosis takes place and the firebird transfers life to a newborn phoenix, who would then rise out of the smoldering ashes and soar to the sky, spreading the arts and sciences of civilization for another cycle of 500 years. The Random House Dictionary of the English Language renders definition number 4 of a phoenix: a person or thing that has become renewed or restored after suffering calamity or apparent annihilation. I think that description of a phoenix is a bit deep myself. The Webster Reference Dictionary of the English Language, Volume 1, defines phoenix thusly: a paragon, a person or a thing of distinction or beauty. Surely they must be talking about the African woman. Harper's Bible Dictionary: seraphim, celestial being, an order of angels who, along with cherubim, were thought of as guarding the throne of God. Now we're going to get into the throne and who and what the throne was. The judgment scene in African scriptures that one now hears so much about in ecclesiastical settings is one of many mental images which the Hebrews embraced while they were in Africa. The two black women, Aset and Nephthys, portrayed protecting the pharaoh, Osir, under the shadow of their wings were archetypal mattresses for the Phoenician, Sumerian, Babylonian, Assyrian, and Israelite seraphim. These African women were the original guardian angels. Osset is standing at the head. Okay, now, before I get there, we're talking about the scenographic enactment of the resurrection of Osir, the Kemetic Christ, and the three hawk manifestations shown. when we see this depiction of the resurrection that a lot of us have seen when we go and look at Arsaw and Oset. Arsaw is standing at his head. She is also represented in one of the three hawk symbols. The other are Nephthys and Heteru, whom the Greeks called Hathor. Heteru is emblematic of a female entity which typifies the goddess of sky, love, beauty, happiness, abundance, and prosperity. The resurrection of Asar is one of the first stories of the resurrected god ever depicted in human history. The characterization of these three birds with fluttering wings in the picture demonstrates the feminine forces. Aset, the animating power, Nephthys, the spiritual energy, enlightenment, and prayer, and Heteru, who represents love, beauty, joy, and the essence of celestial atmosphere. Indeed, the three sisters, Pastor Flowers, I see you in the chat room. All right. The lap of Aset, the throne of power. Let us here reflect on the sublime meaning of the throne symbol manifested in the ancient Chaldean high culture science. Henry Frankfurt informs us concerning the seat of power in the ancient Chaldean empire. The name of the goddess Isis is written as it simply means throne. While she is also depicted with the throne as her distinctive attribute, the throne, Isis is the mother of the king. The bond between the king and the throne was the intimate one between his person and the power which made him king. The throne was made the king. The throne which made the king is comprehended as a mother, and thus it was, and thus it may be the object of the profound and complex feelings. Why is the throne connected to Aset or Isis, the mother force who stands behind the god Asar, and surround him with her wings? She is also depicted standing behind and protecting all of the pharaohs of Kemet, because they were said to be her sons. Why? Because she symbolizes the matrilineal system first developed by Africans, the line of descent through which the throne is inherited. Thus, the throne which made the king is comprehended as the mother. I want to stop there for a minute. Because if indeed the woman, which is Isis or Aset, and that simply means the throne, and we are the throne, any man that disrespects a woman, be it his mother, his daughter, his sister, or a lover, is disrespecting where and whom he came from. Regardless if that is his biological mother, he is still disrespecting her and disrespecting you as a woman. So pay close attention to that. If a man disrespects a woman, that's just that. There's no going around that. That shows you what he thinks of and how he's going to treat pretty much every woman. Not saying that certain situations don't happen, but that's the general baseline for me. I'm sorry. Anyway, let's see. Pharaoh Seti I is spoken of as reposing of the thighs of Aset upon ascending the throne at his coronation. In ancient African societies, the king's throne was referred to as his mother's lap because it was through the female line that he received his power, and the king was not the king until he had been anointed by the queen. For it was then ardently believed that it was only by the power of the female force that man had achieved civilization in the first place. Therefore, there would not be a nation if it were not for her. Again, any man that disrespects a woman is disrespecting himself, period. She was the nourisher, the first stage of inspirational motivation in a person's life. Even then, the hand that rocked the cradle ruled the world. So today, it is not by accident that black men have profound and complex feelings for their mothers and even refer to their wives and soulmates as mama. It is an old African custom. And I want to mention here, in every African language, any word that meant mother or grandmother meant God. And so I'm going to go a step further and tell you that any man that tells you that the black woman ain't God and that there were no matrilineal societies in Africa needs to go back and do his studies, because he is pretty much spitting on the scholarship of his own colleagues. And that's all I'm going to say. Not that a man thinks of himself as a baby before his woman, but rather that he recognized her not only as his woman and his wife, but his source of inspiration, the same as his mother was and probably still is to him. So when he refers to her as mama, it is a very holy and sacred thing. It is indicative of the fact that your first comfort and the first woman you ever loved in your life was your mother. So naturally, that transference goes to your woman. Some readers may wonder why I keep placing so much emphasis on this. Well, it is because I believe that the realization and internalization of historical reality of the African woman's true role in the creation and maintenance of world civilization is a master key to the black race reclaiming and regenerating its traditional greatness. Personally, I grew up with a somewhat male chauvinistic outlook. And when Dr. Joseph Yakinen and other African scholars began teaching this concept, it took me weeks to get it together, especially when he informed us that man's first idea of a supreme being was Mother God. As the saying goes, this declaration wasted me, and I walked around wrestling with it for several weeks. Then I returned to my studies in ancient African history, determined to objectively research the subject thoroughly. As a result of that decision and positive action, I am now happy to say I have seen the light, for I have come to understand that when the black man assumes a proper attitude about the sacredness of the feminine energy of the black woman, he then brings himself back in line spiritually, and as he sincerely demonstrates this in word and deed, the world will begin to respect him again, and he will advance by quantum leaps toward taking his rightful place in the sun. For this primary purpose was the male entity created, to protect, defend, guide, and provide for the women and the children she bears. As she earnestly sets about doing this, she then is free again to be his nourisher and inspirational force, which motivates him and her to do great things. In antiquity, African men tenaciously defended the matrilineal system with their very lives, because as long as the woman was respected and held in high accord, then the nation had dignity. After all, when you can debase the mother of a people, that's the worst you can do to them. I'm going to stop here. I got to repeat that. When you can debase the mother of a people, that's the worst you can do to them. I remember when I was little, it didn't matter what nobody said to me. If they said anything that ended in your mama or beginning with your mama, that was a fight.
That was a fight.
It was a fight. Your mama, I'm like, what? It didn't matter what they said. Your mama, oh, hell no, you ain't going to talk about my mama. And I still feel like today you're not going to talk about my mama. That's my biological mama, my mama in terms of my sisters and the women I look to as my mother and my cosmic mama. You ain't going to talk about my mama. And when everyone realizes that we come from the great mother, that's still the same thing. You ain't going to talk about my mama. So I just had to throw that in. The matrilineal system did not diminish the male gender. Obviously, the role of male was and is very important, as he accorded her the respect and reverence as the queen mother of the universe. In summation, the throne of the queen mother's lap represented the collective power of the African in the ancient world. So then today, can the harmony and unity of black love help to restore us to our traditional greatness? For it is written, as it was in the beginning, the same shall be in the end. Okay, I'm going to jump to section 3, where he starts to speak about oracles. All right. One of the more elaborate Hebrew sculptural imitations of Kemetic rulers sheltered by the wings of cherubs is recorded in 1 Kings 6:21 through 29. I'm not going to read that whole thing. But the oracle spoken of in verses 21 and 22 is in reference to the chamber where the Ark of the Covenant, from which Yahweh is said to have communicated with the high priest of the children of Israel, was housed. The use of the term oracle as applied in the text gives us another indication as to the degree of esteem the Hebrews may have accorded to the Ark. An oracle is a person or place where people go to find out things, to get answers to their problems, to find out what the future holds in store for them. One of the most renowned oracles in the ancient world was the shrine of the two black doves, symbolic of two jet black priestesses who came out of Africa and settled in Greece when it was colonized by Kemet. This is the reason why on several different occasions I have said that we can't keep holding our history directly to one specific location when we are a global people. Things may have started in ancient Nubia, which they did, and then come up into Kemet, but then we went out from Kemet, and we colonized, and we, you know, did things in several different places. So when you look at Greek culture and Roman culture and other European culture, as well as Kushite, Indian Kushite culture, some Asiatic cultures, I mean, even cultures in the Americas, it's all us. And the thing is, we need to stop giving power and giving credit to people who didn't establish that shit. Yeah, they came through and started twisting some of it, but they didn't establish it. So people really need to do their research. Sisters, I'm urging you to do your research. And if you have questions, you got a lot of sisters you can holler at to get clarity on some of these topics. Okay. I'm going to section 4 where he speaks on the Sapphire Eve, divine mother of the universal egg. Sister Sapphire, a jewel in the heavens. One of the most graphic illustrations of a deity in the midst of celestial powers is the prophet Ezekiel's vision as recorded in the Hebrew scriptures. And above the firmament that was over their heads was the likeness of a throne, as the appearance of a sapphire stone. And upon the likeness of the throne was the likeness as the appearance of a man above upon it. And I saw as the color of amber, as the appearance of fire round about within it. From the appearance of his loins even upward, and from the appearance of his loins even downward, I saw as it were the appearance of the bow that is in the clouds in a day of rain. So was the appearance of brightness and brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord, and when I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard a voice of one that spake. Other than the obvious fact that the entity sitting on the throne is a black man, the color amber being that of a golden brown hue, the most distinctive detail in this world picture is the throne itself. Firstly, well, understanding that all the imagery in this reputed revelation was allegorical symbolism employed to demonstrate a particular object, lesson, or set of values. The question arises in the minds of today's astute observer, just what exactly was the meaning of the sapphire throne as adapted by the Hebrew scribes? I'm going to stop there before I get into what the sapphire throne was. It's important that we understand that when we read the Bible, the Quran, the Torah, any of these so-called sacred books or what have you, that we understand that they are not to be taken literally. In some sections they are, but in most cases they are speaking in symbols, signs, and numbers. So unless you understand what these symbols mean, you're not going to get the true meaning of what they're trying to say. Okay, firstly, the sapphire stone was a jewel of great value in those days, and its ethereal blue color was symbolic of lofty thoughts, spiritual attunement, and cosmic manifestation. In fact, it was the lapis lazuli used so prodigiously in Kemetic jewelry and artifacts. In Sumer and Babylon, it was called the stone of the cosmic mother. The name sapphire is often used as a term of endearment by African men today in reference to the spiritual energy and precious gifts of the black female. Although at times the name has the dual purpose of at once describing the twin attributes of the woman's sweetness as well as when she, quote unquote, gets her habit on, or as some brothers say, get to acting evil. Anyway, let's jump ahead to Eric Newman's observances in reference to the Sapphire Stone, what have you, Sapphire Throne. As Mother and Earth Woman, the Great Mother is the throne, pure and simple, and characteristically, the woman's mother line resides not only in her womb, in the womb, but also in the seated woman's broad expanse of thigh, her lap on which the newborn child sits enthroned. To be taken on the lap is being lap is like being taken to the breast, a symbolic expression for adoption of the child and also of the man by the feminine. It is no accident that the greatest mother goddess of the early cults was named Isis, the seat, the throne, the symbol of which she bears on her head, and the king who takes possession of the earth, the mother goddess, does so by sitting on her in the literal sense of the word. The enthroned mother goddess lives in the sacral symbol of the throne. The king comes to power by mounting the throne and so takes his place on the lap of the great goddess, the earth. He becomes her son. In widespread throne cults, the throne, which was originally the godhead itself, was worshipped as the seat of the godhead. I have a little bit of a mixed feeling about some of that information I just read, but nonetheless, I'll leave it up to everyone to interpret things for themselves. Let's see. Pastor Flowers, you have any comments on anything we have covered so far, or Sister Earth?
No.
Okay. It's a lot of information in this little book. I'm going to try to skip ahead because I don't like doing shows where I'm just reading. I like them to be interactive, but I do want to get the information out in this book. So in a few moments, anyone who has any comments or questions about the information that I'm going over, please feel free to call in 646-716-7675 and make sure that you press 1 so that I will know you have a comment and or question. All right, the egg, a universal symbol of new life. Universally, the ancients viewed the egg as the archetypal symbol of world creation and affection, and affectionate encounters with woman. African women were earthly manifestations of the divine mother of all creation, and union with them was perceived as experiencing the divine vessel of life, especially in the case of sexual expression. In many old cultures, the egg represented the new life that returns to nature at each spring. It was a representation of the old cosmic egg, the universally known symbol of the primordial matriarchal world, which as great realm contains the universe. We find this symbol in modern-day spring festivals such as Easter, even though in this case the original meaning has been misconstrued. Though many ancient cultures associate the rabbit, which represents the moon, with the egg, they certainly did not portray this totemic symbol as producing them as did the Germans, who used to tell their children that the hare would lay eggs for them if they were good. The moon's influence over the birth cycle, which involved the full maturation of the fetus produced from the fertilized female egg, the sympathetic harmony of its phases with the female menstrual cycle was observed by African high culture scientists as having a natural correlation. Motivated by what Godfrey Higgins called the egg of wisdom, the ancient Kushite and Kemetic scientists observed through their own investigation that the female reproductive cells or ovum of animals gave rise generally only after fertilization to a new individual or another living being. Thus, the great respect for the egg and its universal symbology as an emblem of creation. The concept of the cosmic egg is a feature of many creation stories. The myth of the universal world egg was and is known throughout Al-Kabulon, or Africa, amongst the Hindus of India and the old cultures of Greece, China, Japan, and the Isles of the South Pacific. In these myths, creation is symbolized as breaking forth from the fertile egg. The egg is the potential for all life, and sometimes, as in the myth of the Dogon people of West Africa, it is referred to as the placenta of the world. The people of early ages worshiped the genius of fruitfulness, not only among human creatures, but also in all things that were capable of reproducing, and condemned a yea cursed sterility or non-production. To them, the serpent represented organs of generation, as did the bull in Kemet, and the fertility was symbolized by the egg. I need to stop right there, because the first thing that comes to mind when they worship fruitfulness is the fact that a lot of anthropologists and archaeologists, when they go and do these digs and pull up information, every time they pull up something that looks like a goddess symbol, they just, oh, it's just a symbol of fertility or a fertility doll. But what they're not telling you is that that fertility doll was worshipped as a god, and when they buried their dead, they put God with the dead because it was a symbol of the bodies going back into the womb of the cosmic mother. Not only as Newman relates in his book, Sister Earth, are you saying anything? Because I don't think we can hear you. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Not only, as Newman relates in his book, the Great Mother was the egg in one of its aspects symbolic of the moon, it was also in Kemetic hieroglyphics to denote the roundness of the earth. The Persians, who, like other nations in Mesopotamia, received their science and culture from the Cushite Kemetans, believed the earth had hatched from a giant egg, which was their symbolic way of explaining the 360-degree principle as it pertained to the orbits of the planets in our solar system. Wow. I'm going to briefly go on a break, family. So we will be back in just a moment. I'm going to play a selection that is on the new CD from Erykah Badu, New America Part 2, Return of the Ankh. And the name of this is 20 Feet Tall. And y'all listening to the lyrics should probably understand why this is one of my favorites already. We'll be right back.
So I couldn't see.
universe. All right, Sister Earth and Pastor Flowers.
Yes.
Sister Earth, I think you wanted to say something before we
I just wanted to kind of give you a prop for what you just said about how, you know, a lot of these archaeologists and things, they'll find, you know, a goddess symbol somewhere, and they'll be like, oh, it's just a fertility symbol. And it's that's God, like that's part of the way they minimize women's importance. And the funny thing about what you said is I never thought about that before, which is funny because I'm a natural skeptic on all of that. When you hear these archaeologists, they'll find a pot in the middle of the desert. They'll be like, oh, they use this for washing their face. It's like, how do you know? That might have been the shitty pot. They might have went to the bathroom in that pot. You don't know. You're just making assumptions off of what you studied. So by you kind of breaking that down, I was like, wow, that sounds like the truth right there. So I just really kind of wanted to give you props for that one, because every time they find a female figure or something dealing with goddess, they always minimize it, like, oh, it's just a fertility symbol. Like, no, that's goddess. That's God right there. That's the great mother. So big up for that one.
Thanks, sis. Not a problem. That just came to me as I was reading it, because I read that part before, and I knew the connection, but it never came across to me like this. So as I was reading it, Mother was like, you need to tell them this. I was like, all right, I got you.
And see, it's just so funny because, you know, you and I have had numerous talks, and when people go on this stuff, well, this was found here and this is for this, it's like, no, you don't know really what it's for. You're just making assumptions. So anyway, that was interesting that we've never even thought about it like that before.
Indeed, definitely. Pastor Flowers, I saw you make a comment in the chat room about the song. Wow. When I heard this song on Erykah Badu's CD, the first one, and I'm going to briefly go over the lyrics right quick before you make a comment. My love, what did I do to make you fall so far from me? And now I can't recall the cause of the fall, selective memory. And then you built a wall, a 20-foot wall, so I couldn't see. But if I get off my knees, I might recall I'm 20 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. That's an awesome song.
Word.
Awesome. That's basically, you know, as I said before, you know, she loves her son. But this wall, you know, these things, is like to give her the amnesia, you know, to so that she didn't remember who she was, but they knew who she was.
Right.
And she doesn't understand, I've nurtured you, why don't you love me? That was a very deep song. Very. I'm not with myself today because I'm still very sleepy. But this is really, we really got to look back into these things instead of discarding them, because, well, we've got to learn that we've got to read everything. I mean, because everybody's history that they proclaim that's theirs actually is ours. And you really have to go like you dropped the crumb trail, because she did leave clues to help herself wake up. And the Bible and all the other literatures, you know, holy books, the Verdet, the Quran, the Bible, and Judaism, they're all the same with all the books they took out, too. But it's just everything is in there about the Great Mother. It might be hidden. It might, like you said prior to, have symbols and numbers, you know, to cover up. And that's what we got to really begin to dig in instead of looking at the word, because most of the letters that we have weren't even invented, you know. So we have to really go back and dig with, look up these words, etymology, use linguistics. I mean, but you just got to see, because even the mythology is the truth. And, I mean, in school you learned it. it was mythology. It wasn't true, but it is. It's just very symbolized.
That's very true. You have to be able to go over these literatures and essays and stuff and have critical thinking skills. I think a lot of us read things and we kind of take it for face value, but no, you have to apply all that you learn and add it together, because they're, you're never going to find a book, well, besides this book that Sister Seek is reading, that's going to tell you the straight up truth. And it's
correct.
And not all of the writers are lying. Just like I say with archaeology, you find a pot in the middle of the desert and you say, oh, this is so and so, and they use this for this. You are making that assumption about what you know and how you were brought up. So not all the writers are lying. Some of them don't have the whole truth, and some of them are just
correct.
Writing from their point of view. So you
right.
have to, just like Sister Seek always tells us, you need to research, but you also have to apply these critical thinking skills and understand and dig a little deeper. Read in between the lines. I guess that's what it is.
Yeah, and we have to understand that, you know, when you read the Bible, if you are, you know, and I have to deal with the Bible because I didn't read, you know, that's where I learned a lot of things. But the Bible has other books. Once you can get through the codes of the Bible, there are another books. I mean, so these were done on a hierarchy. So it's like in the Bible, it talks about outer courts, inner courts, and holies of holies. And so the masses got the outer court story. So it's not so much that they're lying. They are really giving you the truth right in front of your face. You just don't know what it means.
Exactly. Right. Another thing I wanted to run by you, Pastor Flowers, it has to do with the Bible. I was talking to Sister Seek about it, and I related to, they're telling you in this story how they kept women down. And I might get the names wrong, so please forgive me. That's why I'm running it by you. But from my recollection of the Bible, there was a story, and I want to say it was about, I believe the queen's name was Vashti. And so something, I think it was Vashti, I don't know if I got it right.
You're correct.
Hold on right quick. Area code 216, I'm coming for you soon as Sister finished with her comment. Okay, go ahead, Sister.
Okay, and in the story, the king wanted her to dance in front of all the people at this party or whatever and whatnot. And I believe he wanted her to dance nude, like entertain the men. And she was
correct.
Like, oh, no, I am not doing that at all.
That
and
was
so she blatantly... Yeah, exactly. And so she blatantly refused. And the deep part of the story, besides the fact that her king would ask her to do that in the first place, but the deep part of the story to me, and now this is in the Bible, ladies, is the fact that, of course, the king was upset, but his boys, the priesthood, came and was like, uh-uh, you can't allow other women to know about how she refused you, because then if the other women learn about this, then they're going to start refusing their men and saying no and standing up for themselves. Now, do I have the story partially right?
You have the story totally right. That story,
I remember reading
that story,
passage, said,
that story made me, when I read it for the first time, just, I was on fire. Because I like
that. Isn't that the same story in The King and I?
This is
the
Esther.
One Night with the King?
This is in the book of Esther. This is
Esther,
story.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, that same story was depicted in the movie One Night with the King.
That is what the story is, you know, built on.
Okay.
That is what it is, you know, One Night with the King. Because more or less, I mean, there were thousands of women that he was choosing from.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And she, you know, the idea of, she might have been, because the harem was huge. She only might have got one night. Because, I mean, she was groomed for almost a year or more, just to be with him for that one night.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing here is, Vashti's a very important, because she lost all her, he took away her land, all her resources, and banished her.
That.
And that's what, that story is about, the Black Goddess.
Wow. All right. I'm going to go ahead and check on area code 216. Could you let us know who you are and where you're calling from? Okay, I'm going to try this again. Area code 216.
Yeah, can you hear me, Cynthia?
Yes. Oh, I know who this is. What's up, Connie?
I love
vibration?
You two sisters. Hey, what's going on?
What's good, brother?
Kisses to you two beautiful sisters. You know I had to call in when the dynamic duo both got on.
What's good, brother?
You know, I'm sitting here listening to you, goddess. And, you know, me and you got a date that one day we have to have, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The most honest book that I ever was able to access is called The Womb, the Yanni. Okay, it's between the sisters' thighs, and it's the Book of Eden, the original book, basically, with no text or writing is associated with. Every time a man is born, a woman has to die. There's something called the bar body. In all actuality, it's the XX chromosome. Those are the two sisters. In order for a man to be born, okay, one of the sisters must basically be sacrificed, or an aspect of the feminine energy must be sacrificed for a retraction of a leg on the X to turn into a Y. So every time you see a man walking around, okay, on an internal level, a sister had to die because the original state of the first human is the female brain, the female body, and until you have like a surge in heaven and a surge on earth and you have the endocrine system adapt to that, then there's nothing other than on the physical plane as far as humans are concerned other than the woman.
Right.
And it's called it's called a bar body, okay, B-A-R-R body. And hit me with an email and I'll send you some additional information. But it ain't no book or whatever you get or whatever a man ever say can basically debate what I just said to you. Every man you look at, when you look at him, a female had to be sacrificed. A mother had to sacrifice a daughter in order for that man to exist or he wouldn't actually exist.
And see, guys, I do need to get with you because we still need to do this show on womb biology and genetics, you know, because I've been talking about this show for a minute, but I want you, myself, Abundance Child, and possibly Dr. Eileen Bay on this show along with Pastor Flowers, because this information that you're talking about and the personal conversations that I've had with everyone I just mentioned, it's some information that the people need to know about. And it and a part of what we're going to talk about when we do that show is going to touch on partly about Sarah Bartman and Castor Semenya. And I'm telling y'all, y'all need to go back and research those two sisters I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about, Conscious?
Oh, indeed. You
okay,
know, hey,
okay.
I'm a student of everything. You know, I'm going to be studying everything. I'm not a teacher. I'm a student of it all. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm definitely making plans to do that show. Of course, it's going to be a scheduling thing, so it will be on Sundays or Wednesdays because that's going to be my lineup, pretty much a show every other Sunday, and I'm going to try to do a show every other Wednesday, but that's, you know, based on my schedule or what have you. But it's just certain information that we need to get out here, and I've been on air about a year now. Almost every show I'm bringing a guest on, but it's a lot of information that I've come across myself in bringing these guests on, and, of course, being a student myself, which I'm always a student, so I'm just trying to share some of the information that I've come across as well in this journey to bring some enlightenment to everyone, specifically the sisters, but this information and this knowledge applies to everyone.
Right, right. If it won't vibrate, it won't be no life on this planet.
Indeed.
So I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you, brother.
Adoration and respect to you, sister. My battery's about to run down on my phone and my laptop, so I just wanted to call and say I love you two sisters and the community, okay?
Love you too. Peace.
Up to peace.
What's up? All right. Gotta love the brothers when they call in and are able to give some information to give to the sisters to further their studies and to open up our minds a bit. You know, and tie
into
what we're talking about. I'm sorry, Pastor Flowers, what were you saying?
I said, who are not fighting us.
Right, right, who are not fighting us.
That's,
you know?
It's like a breath of fresh air.
Right, it is, definitely. And to the brothers that listen to this show, I mean, because this show is specific to the women, I don't mind the brothers coming to listen, you know, to be taught some of this information, but it's really not, and this is in all due respect, this show is to teach women whom and what they are. If you want to call in and give information to help share that information with women, but in no, if you're not on the level that the brother that just called in was, and our dear brother Majadi Baruti are on, if you're not calling to present information on that level and being respectful about it, it's not going to be wise that you call and try to argue with this information that we're putting down, because we're not trying to explain to men who and what we are, you know. And we're not trying to shove any information down a sister's throat that is not quite understanding of whom and what she is yet. We all know this in our heart, but we may not quite be accepting of it yet. So, again, I'm just putting this information out there for those who are ready to listen. So, let's see. I'm going to go into Rhapsody for the Glorious Queen of Heaven. I'm going to touch on the section in here called Divine Black Mother of the Universe. All right. Every movement of nature in the cosmos, celestial and terrestrial, was associated with the life-giving, nurturing, and sustaining principle of the Mother Force. That is why her worship was so universal. The forms assumed by this great goddess in the different parts of the world are innumerable. If we survey the whole of the symbolic sphere determined by the vessel character of the archetypal feminine, we find that in its elementary and transformative character, the feminine as creative principle encompasses the whole world. This is the totality of nature in its original unity from which all life arises and unfolds, assuming in its highest transformation the form of the spirit. In point of fact, the Holy Ghost, as mentioned in the New Testament scriptures, is in actuality the feminine aspect of the primal Trinity, Father, Mother, God. There is even reference in the Christian text to this entity as being the comforter, whom shall I send? In the ancient world, even for adult males, the arms and bosom of the female was the most secure and tranquil place on the earth. This idea was later co-opted and corrupted by the early women-hating church fathers of the 3rd and 4th centuries. In their editing of some of the original texts, they intended to totally obliterate the exalted view of the female principle, which was so prevalent in the ancient world. This kind of attitude was not unusual for the sexually ambiguous and maladjusted European, for many of them were probably closest, if not blatant, homosexuals who were envious of the female principle. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to stop right there for a minute, because something bothers me. I'm not going to touch on a certain part of what bothers me right now, because I will save that for a different show where we talk about womb biology and genetics. But what really does bother me, and I respect the author of this book totally, but what I did see throughout this book, and I think this was just a sign of the time frame we were in, and we're still in that time frame right now a little bit, but almost every time a black man talks about our history, and I'm not even talking about this brother speaking about women, I'm just talking about in general, because I just was reminded of it when I read something. Almost every time we talk about our history, when black men talk about it, they almost always go back and blame white people for damn near everything we've been through. But the fact of the matter is, and if it's too hot in the kitchen, get the hell out of it. But the fact of the matter is, our societies were fucked up in ancient times before white people got there. So then the question you have to ask yourself is, what the hell happened? And that, too, I've covered on different radio shows, but we would definitely give a lot of attention to that particular topic at a different time.
Well, we made them.
Okay, so I'm going to jump to a different.
Can I tell you why we made them?
I'm scared. I already know because you
Real
told
quick.
Me, but I'm going to go ahead and tell me why we made them.
We made them to breed out the black woman. And
it took away her power. When you, it's just like, I mean, you look at the dark, and you see the dark as the dominant, and then you see the light as the
okay,
recessive.
Wait up, go back, so people can make sure they understand what you're saying. Why we made who?
We made the white people. We made,
okay.
And in the beginning, there was a blue-black. They were very, very dark. And then they began to take away the melanin. Well, that melanin also made, I mean, if you have a lighter and a darker color, of course the darker color is going to be dominant. And so this was the making of slaves in a lot of ways. But the real reason for making them was to breed it out to a lighter color in order to mix it back with the black, like putting, like having black coffee and putting cream in it. And you weaken the person, and that also caused amnesia. Because they, it was not just, you know, these were purposely, the story in the Bible where it talks about Jacob breeding the cattle is what this is about. We did this. It was a way, if you had an enemy, you could make the enemy, who might have been maybe a formidable, contender, he would become less formidable if he was not as strong. And the Bible says they will make them weaker and weaker. And the only thing that can make you weaker, as we are seeing now today, is when they mix this up in with different things. I mean, balance, when you have Ma'at, we have the right amount of what we need in our bodies. When you put something, you know, sometimes people go and they're going to make a formula and say, well, I'm going to put a little extra because I want it to be more potent. But it really knocked that body out of balance because you put too much. So we took away things in us that actually caused us not to be as strong living under the sun, because the sun is the life force. That's the mother, too.
That's another thing that a lot of people don't like to touch on and acknowledge as well.
I mean, and it's like we have to, if we're going to research our history, we have to research the good, the black, and the ugly.
Right, right. I'm going to check on area code 216 again. I don't know if he called back in and raised his hand or not, or if he's still listening. 216.
All due respect, Goddess. I'm just, you know, in the cut, you know me, just listening. Thank you, though, very much.
Okay. All right.
Somebody said coffee doesn't lose its potency if you add milk. Okay.
Anyway, we have about 20 minutes left in the live stream, so before we if I'm not finished reading what I want to go over, I'm still going to continue for up to an hour, but I'm going to try to get in the last 20 minutes, the last portions of this book I want to go over, so that I do not have to do a part two, because I definitely want to get all of it into this session today. So I'm going to go ahead and go into why the idea of the Great Mother was so important to primordial man. Ancient societies believed that those related by blood shared by mother blood shared a common soul, so no member of the group would hurt another without doing injury to himself. Mutual trust was maintained exclusively among members of a matrilineal kinship group known as mother's milk. Societies where women set the standard of behavior and morality were found generally kinder than male-dominant societies. Children grew up without harsh punishment, expecting kindness from others as a matter of course, and consequently developing into non-hostile, non-violent adults. Envy, greed, and exploitiveness were minimal. Depression almost unknown, crime almost unheard of. People were generally good-humored, trustful, and confident. Women were treated as equals of men. Attitude towards sexuality tended to be positive and permissive. People seemed to feel sure Mother Nature would provide for their needs, even in cases where a harsh environment demanded hard work for the sake of survival. In those life-enhancing societies, the original black man believed that motherhood was expressly linked to the superior intelligence and magical powers, for they were keenly aware of and appreciated the fact that the time a child spent with its mother had a direct bearing on its cognitive formulation. All over the earth, life was measured by this fundamental symbolic equation: women equal body equal vessel equal wisdom equal the world. This was a universal symbolic formula for early man because the first and most profound world that a human ever knew was that of his/her mother's womb. Then once delivered into the temporal world by his or her early life experience was overshadowed by her maternal protection, nurturing, and instruction and discipline. Understanding this, the first of all mysteries, I am totally in agreement with Dr. Yosef Binyakinen when he says that mother is still the most profound example of godhood on earth. For example, for the African, the maternal instinct has always been of paramount importance. From earliest times in African society, there has always been a strong bond between mother and child. In our high culture societies, to show disrespect to one's mother is tantamount to sacrilege. To the African, the maternal instinct is the primary basis for a civilized society and provides the impetus to the paternal instinct, which enables a man to see himself as more than just an axe swinger and a spear thrower. This attitude on the part of blacks in the ancient world generated their very high regard for the black woman as the queen of the universe. For example, of this African philosophy of life is illustrated by Sheikh Anta Diop in The Cultural Unity of Black Africa. The Ashanti considered the bond between mother and child as the keystone of all social relationships. They consider it as a moral relationship which is absolutely binding. An Ashanti woman will not stint in the work she does or the sacrifices she makes for her children. No demand is too exaggerated for a mother to meet. Although she shrinks from inflicting punishment and never disowns her child, an Ashanti mother requires from her children both obedience and affectionate respect. To show disrespect to a mother is equivalent to committing a sacrilege. I just had to pause for a moment after that because I think some of us have forgotten it.
Yeah. Said the heavens would be like iron. Your prayers wouldn't go up.
All right. The black woman as mother creatress and ruler of the earth. I'm going to read that section. In Kemet, not only the ancient goddess Nut, known as the heavens, but most astonishing of all was the discovery of numerous accounts of female creators of all existence, divinities who were credited with bringing forth not only the first people, but the entire earth and the heavens above. There were records of such goddesses in Sumer, Babylon, Egypt, Africa, Australia, and China. For thousands of years, maybe even millions all over the world, the African woman was portrayed as the mother creatress and personify as the world protecting feminine maternal side of the ultimate being. Excuse me. As such stands for the spontaneous loving acceptance of life's tangible reality. She was the supreme revelation of existence in the material cosmos, and she represented all things made of matter and perceptible to the senses. Touching on another aspect of this same theme, Dr. John Henry Clark says, and I quote, "I feel that there is a need to call attention to the historical status of African women and their contribution to the development of African societies. In order for them to be better understood as warrior queens in defense of their respective nations, the Senegalese writer Diop has shown new insight into this subject in the book The Cultural Unity of Black Africa. He observed that most non-European societies are mainly matrilineal, the line of descent being traced through the mother. Dr. Diop extends the explanation this way. It is matrilineal, and it is the man who brings a dowry to the woman. This proves, if proof is needed, that the woman in these societies had respected rights. Most of these societies developed before Europe was born. In Africa, the woman's place was not only with her family. She often ruled nations with unquestionable authority. Many African women are great militarists and on occasion led their armies in battle. Long before they knew of the existence of Europe, the Africans had produced a way of life where men were secure enough to let women advance as far as their talent would take them. I don't like that word, let, but anyway. Barbara Walker thinks that for a long time, men feared to oppose women because they were convinced women were more closely aligned with the forces of nature. West African tribesmen testified that women were more powerful than men, for to them alone the mysteries of the gods and the secrets of things were known. Interesting. All right, everlasting sculptures, forms of the most beautiful woman on earth. All right, before I get to that, there's another caller with their hand up. And it is a private or a Skype caller. Could you let us know who you are and where you're calling from?
You sure can, goddesses. What's up? This is Elle from Georgia. What's up, ladies?
Peace. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I appreciate the show that you're giving here, and I just thought I'd call in and try to contribute the best I can.
Okay.
But
okay.
I just did want to point out that when you really study the European or those who classify themselves as white, they're very much aware of our history and how we ran our civilizations. And what they had to do was take us, give us the law backwards. You know, they understood the law because we are the law. We make the law, and whatever we approve of and okay is what's going to be the reality. So when they conquered our countries and civilizations, they had to teach the children. I mean, they're going to kill off everybody that got the information, like the priests, the priestesses, the wise people, da-da-da-da-da-da. And then they're going to raise the kids backwards. So that's all any conquest and slavery is about, you know, killing off the people with the knowledge and then taking the kids and raising them backwards.
The art of war.
So even, right, exactly, that is. It's a very strategic art of war. So even now, they're coming back out with the information about breastfeeding. Now, all African women, that's all we did was breastfeed.
Correct.
But then they got us over here and told us giving our babies cow's milk and Similac and Enfamil was better than the breast that come from the baby's own mama. Now, who would fall for that? You know what I'm saying? An enlightened person would not have fallen for that. But they, like I say, when you raise the kids after you have killed off the people with the knowledge and then
exactly.
you raise the kids in slavery, you can tell a child anything.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? So they tell you, oh, don't breastfeed your baby. Don't give your baby human milk. Oh, get that baby this milk from this cow. You think that's not going to mess up your DNA? You think that that's not, I mean, come on. There has to be chromosomal effects to giving a human baby artificial milk from another animal other than its mother. But we did
right.
it. You see what I'm saying? And now we wonder why we got all these problems, because we have not followed the law. We got to get back to following the law. Another thing I wanted to point out is about the white folks. They didn't come from us. You have to realize that we are 9 ether beings, there are 6 ether beings, and Caucasians are 3 ether. Now, the 6 ether beings is the Hindu black man. That's the black man over there in, what's that one? He real dark with the straight hair. That worship the fire and the animals and stuff and don't eat cows, that's him. Okay, he is the original Adam. They are the fallen ones that were cast out. That's who the white people come from. That's their fathers. That's their parents. And they're more connected and related to them. And they are homosexuals. That's why their nature is more in line with that black man. So when you say black man, you must identify which black man. Because that's a black man, too, but he's not us. He's not a 9 ether being. He's a 6 ether being. White people are 3. Huh, I'm sorry.
I don't want to seem as though I'm cutting you off, but I do want to get to the rest of this book before we
get off the air.
Live stream. But what I will say is the purpose of this show is really to teach women who they are. I'm not really trying to focus on what white people are doing and what they're not doing. And it's not to discount what you were saying, because what you said brought forward some good points. My whole point in mentioning all this and going through this book is to let the black woman know whom and what she is and what she has to do to get her mind right for to be the betterment of ourselves as sisters and the children we bring forth.
Okay.
I do want to make sure we bring that back full circle, that that's what the whole focus of Black Womaniverse is.
Okay, let me give you this website, because this has got a lot of our ancestors who were queens and rulers. Can I give
all right.
it to you? Okay, it's www.guidegumeneleders.com/womeninpower/womeninpower000.htm. And you will have a whole list of women who was running the show, ruling it, queens, high priestesses, and everything. I was on this website today, and I'm printing out copies, right? You know, printing them out.
Are you in the chat room?
No, I'm not in the chat room. My computer keeps going in and out on me, so, you know, I can't always rely off it all the time.
Okay.
But thank you so much for your show, and I'll try to continue to listen. And please look at that website. It's a lot of information on it, and you may want to do some shows on the information that you get from this site.
I thank you so much for that information.
Definitely. You're welcome. Thank you as well.
Adding in to the show today. Thank you.
Okay. Peace, goddesses.
Peace. All right. Okay. All right. Where was I? Okay. Yes. Let's see here. The original black woman was the first model and standard of feminine beauty. She represented the epitome of graciousness, the sublime elegance of her cornrowed or bushy hair, the dignity of her facial comeliness with her broad nose and delectable full lips, and the awe-inspiring curves of her voluptuous form was the subject of artists all over the world around 40,000 years ago. And it still is that way today, except they don't like to come out right and tell us that, because they want us to think that what's pretty is blue-eyed and blonde hair, or whatever is far away from the black woman. But it's obvious to the person who knows what symbology is or symbolism what beauty is. Or you can just, black woman, just look at yourself. That's what beauty is. In almost every case, the head is scarcely blocked in. The hair is, hold on, wait, let me back up. In 1909, Lower Austria, a Venus figurine was unearthed of the type that was buried with the deceased about 20,000 years ago to help make their journey into the spirit world. Commenting on this, Le Grand Cleed says, in the case of Grimaldi artwork, the truth stares across 400 centuries and reveals the African features of the people so skillfully depicted. And he continues by quoting, in almost every case, the head is scarcely blocked in. The hair is often represented sometimes by simple parallel lines, as at Willendorf. We can interpret this feature also found in primitive Egyptian art as a type of hairdressing, an arrangement in narrow plaits or in short tresses of short tufts, such as are found in the modern Negro or Negroid faces, particularly of the Bushmen and Hottentot tribes whose hair is grouped in little bunches. I have said, as have many other brothers, all praise is due to the Creator for the black woman, and now in my eldership years, as I review portions of my life in pleasant reflection, I can truly understand why the Nubian Grimaldi was so enamored by this particular feature of the feminine charm in his day. In their artistic creation, the Nubian Grimaldi put much emphasis on the divine manifestation of the African female anatomy. Breasts were milk of life and the pillows of comfort. The amply endowed hips and posterior was one of the most remarkable signs of beauty in the ancient world. And the vagina was viewed as the portal of heaven, the Garden of Eden, the gateway to new life. All of these things were very sacred to the original black man. All right, let's see. There's a couple other things that are in this book that I want to go over, but I'm going to skip to the part about the birds because I want that part to be on here live stream. We have about 9 minutes remaining. Again, our call-in number is 646-716-7675 so that you can get on the line to listen to the remainder of the show. And I want to say thank you to everyone who came out to listen to the show today and who's listening to this in archive. Let's see. The black woman, the primogenial bird of paradise, the association of the African woman with heaven resulted in her being totemically depicted as a bird because her influence with children and her husband was at times ethereal, inspiring them to do great deeds. Again, Walker informs us that the Latin word aves meant both birds and ancestral spirits or ghosts or angels. And she goes on to tell us that the Chinese said women knew the secret of flying before men did. In ancient mythologies, the African woman was called the bird of earth, the great mother that laid the egg, and at other times when the cosmic egg had hatched, she was referred to as the bird of heaven that rises from it as a golden hawk. Throughout the ages, the spiritual wings of black women has always ignited the soul and fanned the fires of human imagination. This feminine wisdom principle was an impetus for man's quest to drink from the fountain of eternal knowledge and the unction which spurred him to accomplish most of the incredible achievements of the ancient African high culture, systems, and civilizations. That is why she is often depicted as a serpentine fire, the Hindu reference to the energy force which moves up the spine and inspires the brain. There was one other section in here on the tying the knot and weaving the threads of wisdom. I'm going to save that for another time because our time is getting short here, and I do want to check to see if Pastor Flowers has anything else she wants to add that we did not touch on that is fitting to mention in reference to what we've been speaking about today.
Well, no, I think this, you know, you really hit on some really good sources to prove that, you know, it is the African goddess. She's always been considered God. She always will be because that's what she is. And she is the guardian angel. You know, I guess we've got to have a more open mind to look at all of this because, I mean, we as the people who are basically been miseducated have got to get reeducated and understanding what this is. They might have tweaked some things, but most things are still there. But it does require deep study. You have to want to know. You have to seek it.
Indeed, indeed. I'm going to briefly mention before we go off of live stream two other books, and I know I mentioned a whole lot of books that I have here in my personal library, but it's two books that I will probably get into in the near future. One of them is Jambalaya, the Natural Woman's Book of Personal Charms and Practical Rituals by Louisa Peach. I read a lot of this book yesterday, a whole lot of this book. Sometimes I don't read books from cover to cover. I'll, you know, just pick up a book that I'm attracted to and just open it and read it in the, you know, just read whatever, you know, Spirit is telling me to read. So this is a really good book. I haven't read the entire book, but I've read a big portion of the book yesterday. Another book is The Yoni, Sacred Symbol of Female Creative Power. You would be amazed at some of the information that's in this book. And ironically, until black women start writing books about themselves and letting the truth be known about who and what we are, a lot of these books are written by white women and white men.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they don't exist, but it's kind of rare to find books that are written by black men telling the truth about the black woman. And more black women are starting to step up to write books And that is a good thing, because it's wonderful when we can look on the bookshelves and find books about ourselves written by us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a writer or an artist of any kind, you know, get on your game telling the truth about who and what we are. So I'll put that out there. And again, I want to thank everyone for coming out today to, you know, listen to the show. Everyone who's listening in archive, thank you much. I want to play one other piece right quick before we head on out. But if y'all have any, if you want to contact me, my email is blackwomb@divinechemistry, and chemistry is spelled K-H-E-M-E-S-T-R-Y. And you can reach me there. Also, you can check us out on blackwomanshealth.ning.com. And woman is spelled W-O-M-A-N-S, blackwomanshealth.ning.com.
I'd like to make a comment.
Okay.
I really enjoy the reading of, you know, you say you're not apt to really reading, but I think that helps a lot of us, you know, sometimes to get access to books that maybe we can't. I think you need to do a lot more of these shows on these books that you're reading, because she got a lot of books.
I'm trying to get used to that, and that's why I did this today. But what I would like is if there are some sisters out there that have these books that would like to participate in reading these with me, because I don't want to have to read during the whole show, because sometimes I like to sit back and listen and be able to make comments off of what I'm hearing as well. But you know, I'll do what I have to do to get the information out. So that's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that input, because then that lets me know I'm on the right path and picking up these books and letting it be airborne, because there are a lot of people who don't have access to these. So
Right. It's not like we're going to read the whole book, but just to give you the information to, you know, just a taste so that you can go on and further your studies.
Right. Because there's a lot of information out here in the chat room. I'm just going back looking at the chat room because I've been reading. I haven't really had a chance to keep my eye on the chat room. But chat room has had a whole lot of information in here. I can't even really go back and see all of it. But anyway, again, thanks you to everyone who came out to listen today. And everyone who missed the beginning of the show, go back and listen. But I am going to play this bit of a segment before we head on out from Diva Mama Tanya.
Hi, this is Tanya K. Freeman, affectionately called Diva Mama Tanya. And I'd love for you to join me and my beloved on a retreat cruise to the Bahamas the weekend of October 29th and November 1st. Celebrate awakening the diva within. Enjoy life-changing seminars and belly dance rituals on Coco Cay Island. Invite your significant other to participate in embracing the sacred masculine. Then join us again as we share our views on the beauty and the power of sacred intimacy. Contact Alicia at 877-227-5184 or visit wombshaman.com. That's WOMBSHAMAN.com. Relax, renew, refresh on this extraordinary journey.
Giving something up.
We are giving.
something up. We are giving something up.
We always give it something up.
We are giving something up.
We always give it something. We always give it something up.
I'm
97. Mother has a choice but to go find work and leave her kids alone. Far from heaven, so she's gone. 5 days out the week, you bring up peace. A man is coming up some dress, bringing her back some other woman's sickness. A baby girl is crying, mama, please. When you're gone, that name is facing me. Around the world, from back to land, down to Zoe, turn back to New York City. In the dark, yeah, what I get is, if you deserve it, you can relate.